This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone, reporting this week from Russia. Whenever reporters land in foreign capitals, they interview the cab driver. Ours conveniently held the same views as the vast majority of Russians, according to recent polls. Here's what Alexei says.
What do you think of President Putin?
He is a good president. He's done a lot in Russia. Have you seen the program when Putin answered the people's questions on television? He immediately made a decision, and with a single call, he fixed everything.
And it's not a problem that he doesn't really want a free press.
Why? We do have a free press. Everybody says whatever. Here there is no such thing as not being able to say something.
He doesn't want the opposition on the radio or television. Do you think that that's a good thing?
What do you mean by saying not letting the opposition on? You have everything on TV, everything that's possible. And what's forbidden is forbidden.
What do you think of Garry Kasparov?
You mean the chess player? I think Karpov is better.
Moscow may shelter a nest of elitist malcontents, but Alexei speaks for the general public.
Well, what can I do about the public? I don't have other public.
Yevgeny Kiselyov, big-time anchor under Yeltsin, turned smaller-time radio host under Putin.
The policy of glasnost started, it has a date. It started in late January 1987. There was a plenum of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union that officially allowed glasnost and abolished censorship, political censorship. Let's say we have 20 years of democratic media history in this country. So what do you expect?
He says journalists have to sell more than their work. They have to sell the idea that their work matters.
We have to face and accept it, that this is the public that we have. We have to stir them up somehow, and if we can, well, it's us to blame, nobody else.
But journalists might be forgiven for laying some of the blame at Putin's door. Boris Yeltsin, for all his fecklessness, did communicate a genuine regard for independent media. Putin conveys contempt. Russian broadcast personality Vladimir Posner was an unofficial Soviet spokesman during the Cold War as a frequent guest on Nightline. After Glasnost, he briefly co-hosted a show with Phil Donahue.
The way the media is treated here, I think, is very cynical. And basically it's that if your newspaper, magazine, whatever, reaches a small number of people and you don't really influence public opinion at all, then you're pretty free to write what you want, and the same applies to radio or to a local television station. But as soon as your outlet reaches a lot of people, especially the so-called federal channels, which is the equivalent of network television in the United States, you only get that information which the powers that be want you to get.
Tell me how you want to be identified.
It's a good question. My name is Anastasia Izumskaya, and that's it, unemployed journalist.
Her former employer is Russia News Service, which produces newscasts and some news shows syndicated to hundreds of radio stations. Recently, the big oil company Lukoil became RNS's majority shareholder. Soon after that, the new management called for half of its news stories to be positive to boost ratings.
They told us that our listeners are successful people who own four shops and are about to buy a fifth, and they do not want to listen to tragic news. They need more positive news. They're interested in news about neckties and cufflinks, fashion trends.
And the new management suggested that eliminating voices from opposition parties not approved by the Kremlin would also be a very positive move. Izumskaya quit. Serious journalists across all media have quit or been fired or arrested or evicted or killed. Let's start with evicted, because in a sense, they're all being evicted. The Russian Union of Journalists, with more than 100,000 members throughout Russia, is getting kicked out of its building.
The thing is that the people who spread all kinds of gossip of what is going on here, they mainly don't care to check their information. They claim that I had wild animals here, but they are all tamed.
The head of the union, Igor Yakovenko, says the building was constructed back in 1980 with funds provided by journalists and that Yeltsin essentially gave it to them. The authorities claim the union is violating the Russian tax code by making improper commercial use of donated space. There's also been some grumbling about the menagerie in Yakovenko's office, the raccoon, the mongoose, the fox, the bunny, a couple of mammals we could neither identify nor translate, and the skunk.
Oh, my God.
Yakovenko says he's going to fight the eviction with all the legal muscle he can muster before the government has a chance to fill part of the building with a TV show called Russia Today. He says it's blatant propaganda. And then he observes, like all the other disgruntled reporters we spoke to, that propaganda and entertainment is all TV offers here. Russian TV journalists may feel a little confined, I said, but at least they don't suffer untimely evictions, do they?
Это правда.
This is true. People are better able to tolerate cages. They get used to them more quickly than animals. Animals are more freedom-loving, less ready to endure captivity. It's true. Maybe that's why I love animals so much.
A couple of flights down, the Center for Journalism in Extreme Situations, started 7 years ago by journalist and historian Oleg Panfilov.
We invented this name because we wanted to help journalists who are planning to work in Chechnya or other wars. But very soon we realized that all Russian journalists are in extreme situations.
Russia is the most dangerous place in the world to be a reporter after Iraq. 13 journalists have been murdered in contract-style killings since Putin took office. No one I spoke to would seriously accuse Putin of these murders, but no one has been brought to justice for these crimes, so he is charged with criminal indifference. When Anna Politkovskaya died, Putin told the German newspaper that despite her fame in the West, she was, quote, a person of little influence in Russia. Panfilov remembers the day she was buried on the outskirts of the city, far from public transportation.
It was raining. If you could only see how those hundreds of people walked in the rain, many kilometers, only to say goodbye to Anya.
But was she seen as a victim or a martyr? He said he saw her as both.
Victim because she was killed cruelly, and the martyr because she managed to prove that they were afraid of her. It means that what she was doing was right, and what she was doing was very important.
Politkovskaya worked at Novaya Gazeta, the third reporter at that paper killed under suspicious circumstances related to their work since Putin took office. Igor Domnikov was killed by a fatal blow to the head in 2000. Yuri Shikashikin died of a supposed allergy in 2003. The authorities wouldn't release his medical records, not even to his family, declaring them a medical secret. Novaya Gazeta deputy editor Sergei Sokolov is investigating all their deaths. He has suspects, but he doesn't really believe those responsible will ever be brought to justice. He looks exhausted. Why go on?
We need the truth not for the court or the prosecutor's office. We need it for ourselves and for the people who loved us and whom we love. Given the general state of modern journalism, I can say only one thing. What is the difference between our official journalists and prostitutes? The women who sell themselves in the streets know who they are and admit it. Journalists also know who they are, but they deny it and call themselves the free press.
If he could change anything about Russia, I asked him, what would it be? The courts, he said. Justice is served only to those with money or power. Andrei Richter is the director of the Moscow Media Law and Policy Center.
It's almost everywhere in this country that you can hire someone to kill your bad husband or bad wife, and people view it almost like street crime, like something which can happen every day. So when we speak about the murder of journalists, we should put it into this wider context.
You're making, you know, Russia, a land of laws, sound like some banana republic.
It is like a South American banana republic with only condition we don't have bananas, we have oil. But all the rest is about the same.
Russia has a range of legal remedies to settle a dyspeptic press. To oust the Union of Journalists, it's using alleged tax code violations. In a more notorious case, a U.S.-funded NGO that provides training to journalists here, called the Educated Media Foundation, or formerly Internews, was recently closed down. The reason? The director passed through Russian customs last January with a couple of $1,000s in cash she should have declared. She called it a stupid oversight. The Russian authorities responded by seizing the group's computers and freezing its funds, effectively closing it down. But there are other laws specifically designed to chill the media, especially one passed in 2002 called the Law Against Extremism. Andrei Richter.
So the law on extremism makes for the government possible to shut down media organizations if the government, the courts, the prosecutor's office believe that they disseminate political extremism materials. Political extremism materials more and more become a euphemism for political opposition materials.
I always say that freedom of speech is like a corridor.
Again, Vladimir Posner.
It can be a wide one, a narrow one, but there are walls. And if you try to break down those walls, you're going to have a problem. In this case, in Russia today, it's much narrower. It's not censorship in the classic sense of the word. It's to say you don't go to a censor who reads your piece and then puts a stamp on it the way it was in the Soviet Union. But clearly, there are people and subjects that at this time you cannot touch.
Smaller outlets like Novaya Gazeta or the maverick radio station Echo Moskvy, we'll get to that in a minute, don't much worry the Kremlin, but no media outlet of real influence and reach, especially TV, can touch the unofficial opposition. In Putin's managed democracy, there is an official opposition, members of which hold seats in the Duma and even appear fleetingly on TV. But unofficials, like Garry Kasparov, are designated extremist. Posner says he'd like to invite Kasparov on his popular national TV show, but he can't. He can, however, invite the ultra-nationalist newspaper editor Alexander Prokhanov, who was regarded as extremist under Yeltsin. Prokhanov recently called for Russians not to send their biological material abroad, not even for medical tests, because Russia's enemies could use it to create a biological weapon. I had a brief talk with Prokhanov about press freedom.
I believe I heard you say just now that you were a Stalinist and you felt that the Soviet period was the best period for Russia.
You are not mistaken.
I am here, I'm an American journalist here to report on the state of freedom of speech in Russia today. What do you have to say to somebody like me?
In the Soviet period, I felt I was totally free. KGB did not follow me. I was a very successful writer. After the Soviet Union collapsed and the era of real freedom started, when freedom of speech occurred, when liberals came to power, and when press was called the Fourth Estate, we lost our freedom of speech. Great writers and journalists who were very close to me were deprived of their right to appear on TV screens. We felt like we lived under a plastic cap. Now the situation has begun to change. In the Putin era, liberals who once had great access to the media are being pushed into the background, and people of my views, who believe in a strong Russian state and centralized control over the economy and culture, have more and more opportunities. My new newspaper, which I started after my old paper Day was shut down, is called Tomorrow. It has no difficulties, either legal or financial. All the TV channels constantly invite me, the Stalinist and Russian state supporter. So how can I claim after all that in Putin's Russia, there is no freedom of speech?
You are a welcome guest on the first channel. Does it bother you that, for instance, Garry Kasparov is not?
No, it does not bother me. Because there was a time when Garry Kasparov was a welcome visitor at all the channels, and my absence did not bother him. It doesn't even bother me that during the dissenters' march, the police clubbed Garry Kasparov's allies. It doesn't bother me at all, because at other times my friends were beaten nearly to death during our rallies. They shot at us from tanks and machine guns, and people like Garry Kasparov never bothered to stand up for us.
Is this then a matter of more speech now, or simply different speech?
Of course, it's a different freedom of speech. Russia is a country where freedom of speech first belongs to some, and they shut the others' mouths, and then freedom of speech passes to the others, and the first ones have to keep their mouths shut. Such is the Russian peculiarity.
Радио «Эхо Москвы».
Прохонов appears once a week on «Эхо Москвы», a radio station he admires, even though he says it's his ideological enemy. One of the most popular stations in Moscow, «Эхо Москвы» slams Putin with stunning regularity, breaking the law on extremism practically on the hour. It's a puzzle no Russian media watcher can solve. How can it do what it does, owned as it is by the solidly pro-Kremlin Gazprom, the oil company that broke the back of the once freewheeling NTV channel, the very emblem of vibrant Yeltsin-era media. Now with NTV firmly under the thumb of the Kremlin, its old journalists are running for cover at, you guessed it, Echo Moskvy. Why is it still on the air? Few even venture a guess, except Echo Moskvy talk show host Yevgeny Kiselyov.
The biggest reason is that in the eyes of the Kremlin, we are not a leverage of political influence. That's number one. Number two, we do not represent any kind of major threat to what is now euphemistically called stability. Number three, they can always shut us down, and they know that. And number four, they need a showcase. They need a window decoration, so to say. When you American guys come here, your politicians, your public figures come here to start talking about, well, violations of the freedom of the speech, they say, well, wait. We have Echo Moskvy. And they are allowed to criticize everyone, to ask most difficult questions, and all the opposition figures are there day and night. So what are you talking about?
Journalists tend to be a cynical lot, none more so than Russian journalists. Still, some place a measure of hope on the next election, even if it is Putin's hand-picked successor, because things change in Russia, and it could go either way. Even now, alternative voices get through. A new independent political magazine has emerged called New Times. The internet is developing. A TV channel based in New York with bureaus in Germany, Israel, and Moscow has some limited reach in Russia. It's called RTVI, paid for in part by the same oligarch who created NTV. Recently, one of its anchors, Andrei Norkin, who also works at Echo Moskvy, won Russian Broadcasting's award for Best News Presenter for a program few can even watch. It was a protest of sorts from within the ranks. I asked Kiselyov if he thinks he'll ever get out of his gilded cage at Echo Moskvy.
I'm quite sure of that, because sooner or later, the situation in the country will change. It cannot last forever. Of course, we don't know who are the next leaders. And probably in 4 years from now or in 8 years from now, we'll be nostalgically reminiscing about the gold days of Vladimir Putin's liberal presidentship.
Nostalgia of all sorts is a frequent theme here. Even nostalgia for the good old, bad old days of fighting to be heard. Actually, that may be, in Prokhanov's phrase, the real Russian peculiarity. More on that in Words and Music coming up. This is NPR's On the Media.
Support for On the Media comes from the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, online at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.